Opinions expressed on this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the management of Louisville.am and Veritas New Media, a Louisville.am production.
Another episode of the Startup Podcast, Conversations with Louisville Entrepreneurs. This is episode number 80 of a weekly thing that I do to sit down and talk with people about what they're working on and what they've done well and what they've done wrong and what we can learn from all of that. My name is Dan Vonderhyde. This week we can speak with Clay Turner and Michael Browning. They're with a company called Onnovative, which is newly rolled out for them. They had a company before called Bank On Software, and we talk about how Bank On came to be and where they are with that whole project, but they've sort of rolled this into a larger umbrella company called Onnovative that software development, and they work on things for themselves and things for you, and they're smart fellas. They're plugged into the startup community, so I think they could probably help you out, and listening to the conversation alone will help you out. Again, begging you to download Stitcher Radio and use that as your primary listening device for the Startup Podcast, because it gives me great metrics on who's out there and how long you're listening and all of that. You can also find me in iTunes, as you can every other Louisville.am podcast. We're making great strides here. Our downloads are crazy for October, and we're pacing quite well for November as well. Thank you so much for supporting the local podcast community. We're redefining talk radio. That's what I like to say. Getting bold, putting that on T-shirts and on Facebook, because that's exactly what we're doing. You can also support the podcast by, of course, sharing it with your friends, whether it's on Twitter or Facebook or in an email or talking about it over coffee or whatever it is, and helping our audience to grow. Or, of course, sponsorship, always welcome. Contact me at contact@louisville.am if you'd like to get on board with that. We do this podcast from the Metro Business Center at Dundee and Douglas in Louisville's Highlands. It's a great co-working space. I sometimes do this unsolicited endorsement of the space. It's I have a little 9x7 room, and we share a bathroom and a sink, and it's a great co-working space. If you're a startup, you're a small business, and you're looking for an office space, Metro Business Center is the place to go. Google it, and you'll find it. Enough of my yakking. Let's get on with Clay Turner and Michael Browning from Onnovative on the Startup Podcast.
I should have recorded everything that we were already talking about, but because that's interesting stuff. Maybe I'll remember to bring it up later on in the conversation. But first of all, I guess we should just get a rundown of who you are and what it is you're working on. Clay, go ahead. Fire it up. Ah, power on the microphone. That's a good one. Who are you? Why are you here?
Who am I? Why am I here? My name is Clay Turner, and I've been in the software development space for almost 20 years, which blows my mind. It's gone by very quickly. But started my career in technology when my father actually brought home a computer with a software program on it that I didn't recognize. And he, I asked him, you know, what is this? And he said, well, it's the software program I'm developing for car dealers, the CRM system. What is CRM? Customer Relationship Management. And I'm working with some software developers in town. Well, I found that pretty intriguing.
And you were how old?
I was 19 years old at the time.
Okay.
So, right out of high school, getting ready to go into college. And so he was experiencing a lot of the same types of problems that a lot of non-technical people experience in working with engineering students, great, intelligent, technical minds, but having a hard time really understanding what the business needs were that were being defined. So there was frustration there, a lot of cash being spent, at least relative to my father's budget. And subsequently, in watching these developers write this application in then Visual Basic 3.0.
That was the best.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. I have no idea. You know, VB 3.1, though, really stepped up the game.
Really did. But, you know, so anyway, I'm looking at this, and I'm like, I understand what they're doing. And so I told my father, I said, you know, I think that we can internalize this, and I think I can carry this development forward. I had not gone to school for it. I had messed around with programming a little bit as a kid, on a Commodore 64 like a lot of people my age.
Sure. And, Apple IIe was my first experience.
So in any case, we did. We were successful at finishing that product up and taking it out to market. regionally, and then ultimately there was a desire to take it nationally. And so we just grew that business from selling software, literally driving from one city to another, from one car dealership to another, to taking and building a national footprint.
So clearly this was in the days before the internet?
It was.
Because you're getting in a car and driving instead of doing a Google Hangout?
We did. There towards the tail end of that venture, we were using WebEx, kind of early versions of WebEx, to do more teleconferencing and presentation. But it was a good experience in many different ways. But that's what got me involved in software. It was just seeing a need and seeing the lack of communication between those who have great ideas and those who are there to deliver on those ideas.
All right. Good background. Now you have 2 minutes.
Michael Browning, and my background, I'd say that my programming experience actually started on the Commodore 64 when I was 12 or 13. So that's kind of where I started my exposure to software development, but I stepped away from it for a very long time through school and trained in economics out of Bellarmine, and after Bellarmine went to General Electric and worked in their competitive pricing division, where we would go out and listen to competitor calls, basically try to get a good background on what our competitors might be doing. And it was pretty interesting, a little bit into some software there. Then on to Humana after that. Humana, I was in their financial metrics division, where we mixed a little bit of software, building small software systems for them tracking their membership and some of their call center metrics. But my kind of entree into the startup world started with a company called Chapman Kelly. And Tony Shy, who's been a guest on the program here, was one of the founders of that. And I joined the company in 2005, whenever we were about, I guess, 6 employees. And we were able to take that company, build it up to 100 employees, and we had an exit in 2010 to a large competitor. After that time, I've been investing in some local startups and also mentoring some startups through the Velocity program, and just kind of working on the next new venture, of which our company, Onovative, is the primary focus right now.
All right.
Okay. So, that's kind of what led us to create this company called Onovative, and we actually had a little bit of a, like most startups and like most new companies, a little bit of a windy road in developing our brand as it is right now, of a custom software development shop that also produces products that we sell directly to the market as well. So we can go into a little bit of that history if you'd like.
Yeah, go nuts.
So I met Clay probably about a year ago now, and he was exploring some of the opportunities in the banking space, specifically providing customer relationship management software to banks. He had seen through his experience that a lot of the software vendors that provided services to banks were really overcharging, quite a bit, providing software that was a little bit suboptimal from a
Work.
Yeah,
we speak English here.
Old technology. I mean, he might be able to go into a little bit more detail on the deficiencies that he saw. But basically, entrepreneurship's all about finding opportunity. He saw an opportunity there to provide software in a more modern fashion, software as a service at a reasonable rate, and not locking customers into very long contracts. So we started working together and built a product, software as a service product, that is basically going to be a platform, a customer relationship platform in the long run, but it is built by a series of modules. And that first module is something called Surveyor. And this allows community banks to reach out to their members, get information from them on their experiences with their bank, what their needs are, and do that in a pretty innovative way. So give you an example here. Whenever you ask a company, hey, maybe you want to know a little bit more about your customers, they might have 15, 20 questions that they want to ask.
SurveyMonkey.
Yeah. So you're going to get a lot of questions, and you're going to get questions that are not written very well and that are just kind of written by the leadership there. What we're able to do with our system is we've pre-written questions that most banks and most other industries now would like to know about their customers. we have a large group of those, and so the bank can go in and select a subset of those that they'd like to ask, or say, we want to know all these things. On the customer side, if you get a survey that has 15 questions or 20 questions, you're not going to want to respond to that many. That's just kind of a fact of life there. So our software intelligently presents a separate subset of those questions to each customer. So each customer is only answering three questions on their iPhone, very simply. But the bank, over the course of surveying 60,000 customers, gets answers to all their questions. So, you know, little things like that that, you know, it doesn't, if you send a survey to someone that you sent a survey to last week, it won't let you do that. It basically manages that relationship for the bank and makes sure they don't over-survey their customers.
Why?
And,
neither of you had a banking background, though, right?
Yeah, actually, I spent about 4 years working for a regional bank who wanted to develop a software development function within it. And so I kind of temporarily left the entrepreneurial space. Didn't know quite how to feel about that at the time. But in my tenure there with this regional bank, that's where I really began to see a lot of the deficiencies in the vendor solutions that were available to them, and the price points, the long-term contracts, et cetera. And it really kind of got my juices flowing in terms of, you know, opportunities in that space to provide something different.
Okay, but banking is not like you didn't go to school for banking.
No,
so
no.
So just working around there, you came to understand the business well enough to know this can be done better.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, we were able to work luckily with a pilot customer that really helped us. They were a nice mid-sized bank. They helped us understand the needs of their customers, their needs, and then we were able to, you know, test those out then with other customers and see if those needs were, you know, similar across other banks.
Real quick, you mentioned pilot customer, which means I don't want to use the term trial, or a tester or a beta tester or whatever, but that's in essence what they are, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a defined time that you should give that test? In order to figure out, is this working or is this not? You know, because anybody starting a business, like, I just want to do this for somebody. I want to see if it's going to work. But then how long do you invest in that time period before you either pull the plug or know that you're onto something?
Well, you know, I think it's variable. But truthfully, we still talk to our pilot customer in detail. And now we have more customers that we were able to develop relationships with that were a closer relationship, that where we get a lot of great feedback. So I don't think there's a set term for that.
Okay.
I think, you know, in the startup world and conversations about, you know, minimum viable product and getting out to market, customer discovery, you know, that process should never stop. So, you know, we try to make a careful balance, though, between listening to this pilot customer, and we don't automatically assume that goes to every other bank that's very similar to them or every other company. Each one has their unique needs, so you need to pick out those needs and build product that is going to be more widely useful than just for that pilot customer.
Okay, at some points there needs to be a jumping off where you are doing this testing and you have some feedback, but it'd be real easy to just fall into this comfort zone of we're going to work with this person, and instead of, I don't know, moving forward, you become complacent in testing?
We actually had many conversations about, you know, we just don't want to be a consultant, you know, to this company. We want to roll out a more productized offering. So, you know, that's what we were able to do. And, you know, very quickly got responses from other banks that our software was very useful. It was valuable. A couple of other little things with the software that are pretty important is, you know, if you have a high rate, if you send a survey to someone, they rate you highly, then right away it asks them for a testimonial that can be used in marketing in the future. So the first time we sent that out, the bank received a testimonial that was amazing that they could use in all kinds of marketing material within 10 minutes. I mean, it was just people that love your company are more than willing to put their name on something that says that. So that was of extreme value. And on the other side of the coin, if someone is upset, it creates a concern within the system automatically and sends that to the bank to help them figure out why this person's upset. And maybe the person wasn't upset enough to complain to someone, but they're a customer they want to keep. So,
okay.
So, you know, we had our pilot customer kind of had launched a website and had an article written about us by Business First. And, you know, from that point, we had inquiries, a significant number from Oklahoma. Things kind of started just rolling in at that point. And, you know, we're to the point right now to where we're servicing banks with won't give exact numbers, but they have hundreds of branches in total and servicing over 100,000 customers. And,
okay.
And that was over the course of probably, I don't know, 3 or 4 months. So
just the two of you?
Well, two of us full-time, but we have a couple of people that are kind of we're experimenting with a kind of trial period slash might even think about it something like a law firm, a partnership track, something where we want to get the best developers and the best people working for us. We're not looking to hire contractors, but we're not looking to hire anyone that isn't a top-tier developer. So
Clay, you just spend most of your time staring at the computer and making things work? Is that how it
– yeah.
What's the division of labor here?
I spend most of my time on the development side of things. Both of us kind of dive into each other's areas of expertise. But, Michael certainly on the marketing, the business strategy side of the equation, certainly has I've learned a lot in working with him there. And then on the software development side, with the experience, Michael dives into software, and we kind of learn from one another as we go and formulate the vision for Onnovative and what kind of company we see it being. And as Michael said, it's pivoted a little bit to be more inclusive of some of the things that we'd like to accomplish beyond just the banking space. Michael has described the initial software product as something that ultimately we found is attractive in multiple industries. And so we wanted to make sure that we were able to quickly take the software that was designed to work really anywhere and take it into other related industries.
Yeah, and that process happened. We'd always thought that there was more application for this survey / customer testimonial, customer concern, software, but we were just really showing this to trusted advisors throughout town and people that we wanted to get opinions on the banking product, and they were saying, "Hey, we'd like to try that here. We'd like to try that here." So, we've done this, for car dealers. We've done it for things like Velocity's demo day. If you went to that, mm-hmm. you received a survey from Surveyor. They sent it out to a few hundred people. Got well over 10 named testimonials about the value of Velocity to the community. I think a 40-50% response rate. So, it's really been something that we've been pulled into these other areas. Sometimes pivots are kind of looked at as that word is looked at as a negative, but actually we've been kind of, banking is still wonderful for us. And
is it really construed as a negative? I don't,
it
says you were wrong.
A pivot is typically used as we had a thought and this thought was maybe a little bit wrong, so we're going to change to this, whereas ours was kind of more of an expansion, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah, right. So.
What just for a software developer with an idea, like I think ideas are free floating around in the world, and people sort of grab onto them, and they may let go of them, or they may decide to pursue them. But for a software developer, somebody who has the ability to make something out of an idea, what do you think is the toughest hurdle to overcome? Like when it comes to getting out of your head or off of a page and into an actual business. Is it like the understanding of the lack of maybe a business model or the way to put that together or developing a revenue stream? What's the biggest challenge there?
I think one of the biggest struggles and probably one of the biggest benefits to the business accelerators in town and just even what the business schools are beginning to teach is this idea of moving towards a minimum viable product and just early customer engagement. And getting feedback. So the temptation for most software developers, and I'll put myself in that category as well, is the if you build it, they will come. It has to be extremely complex and feature-rich. It's got to have every bell and whistle, and it's got to be perfect, as opposed to, again, finding that jumping-off point, being willing to put something together quickly and deviate from it if that's what the feedback suggests that you do. So I think for software developers who have a great idea, they really do need to explore and understand these lean startup principles and apply them and move towards putting something together as quickly as possible that demonstrates what they're trying to accomplish.
Okay.
Yeah, and I would just say on the building software angle is, empathy for the user is the most important thing you can ever have. And it sounds somewhat cliche, but truthfully, just thinking, putting yourself in the position of your future user down the road and trying to take away, something called the curse of knowledge, which is, everything about your sector, everything about the software, how it works, trying to put yourself into the position of a user that is just seeing this for the first time, what would they click on? What would they see? What value would they see from it?
Well, and also, you know, I knock around and do websites here and then, and of course, it works exactly how I think it should work.
Right.
But, you know, I sort of have insider knowledge on all of that, and I may not be considering everything that, you know, my wife might struggle with at times. Like, I don't understand why. What do you mean you don't understand? It's right. I just did it. It's just, yeah. But that's, you know, that's my own arrogance, I suppose.
Yeah. And, there's a lot of complexity that goes into a simple product, you know, and it's a, you know, it might sound a little bit off, but, you know, it truthfully, a lot of work goes into making things just simple to use and self-evident to use. And, you know, so we do a lot of work on that side and a lot of sharing our templates and our ideas with family members that don't use a computer that often. And, you know, any path we can take to get various people.
Aren't you afraid they're just going to tell you, oh, this is great?
Well, yeah.
And then kind of roll their eyes as they turn around.
Or... You know, family's not great feedback from that because they might tell you something's good. But, you know, I know personally I always drilled into everyone that, you know, you would be doing me a disservice if you don't say something critical about this because, you really want that feedback.
Find something wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
Instead of tell me what you think, just say find something wrong
with this. Yeah, tell me what's wrong with this. So we found that through, you know, building our own software and, you know, what has led to then, you know, building other people's software as well on a contract basis. So that's been kind of this other chunk of our business outside of our products that we sell.
So you're clearly Lean Launchpad people.
I think it's valuable. I think it's kind of like a lighthouse out there. You can see some value in it. It's a direction, but following it completely at all times is something that we do with our product. Sometimes you need to make a leap, but, getting customer, validation quickly is always a good idea. So.
This is going to be a big, wide, general question. And it may be tough to answer. I don't know, but why do you do this? You spent 4 years working for somebody else. Right in the bank, you both have marketable skills, and any company would love to get their hands on. So why do you do this? Why do you fight this daily fight as an entrepreneur? That I'm looking for you to inspire some people here.
it is. I personally have always just had a hard time with the concept of working for one person or one company for the rest of my life. It really is just kind of a personal preference. There are those who enjoy the security, and certainly there's a place for security. And as I have grown older and now married and have 3 kids, I certainly see the place of security. But at the same time, I think that it is important to take risks, and it is important to think outside of the box. It is important to grow personally and professionally. And, the best way that I've found, at least in my world, to do that is to take risk and try and be innovative and come up with something that other people like to use. And software development has really kind of been more of a canvas for me than anything else.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting.
It really is more of an art than a science for me. It's like I was telling you earlier, Dan, about, you know, being an amateur musician at one point in my life. You know, it was my art, and software has allowed me to do the same, to express myself in very productive ways. I guess it's just knowing yourself and what your strengths are and what your weaknesses are, and I continue to learn more and more about that personally.
But your father had a role in it. I mean, with that whole first thing that you did, where
absolutely.
So maybe the apple just didn't fall far from the tree.
Well, my father's always had a very entrepreneurial spirit. Maybe it is genetic. I know they say that that it does. It's in the genes, this entrepreneurial spirit or craziness. But his father was an entrepreneur before him as well. So definitely, there's kind of a family legacy of entrepreneurship. And I guess the number one thing is really just that he taught me was to not be afraid. You know, you got to take risks, and what's the worst that can happen? So
what's the worst that could happen?
Well, the way he would always phrase it to me is they can't eat you, so go for it.
That's right. You know, that's right. How about you, Mike?
You know, for me, it's a little bit of a David and Goliath thing. You know, there's nothing better as a small business or entrepreneur of taking down a really large competitor when it comes to, winning a contract from them. You know, at Chapman Kelly, we were, even when we were 10 people, we were able to win contracts over billion-dollar companies. And, you know, that's just, that's an extremely rewarding process. It's even better whenever you can provide the customer with something that's more, that's valuable to them and it's affordable. You know, in the business world, there are a lot of people that just are looking to get as much margin as they can on everything. You know, Jeff Bezos has a great saying that, your margin is my opportunity. And, you know, I'm a big believer in that. So, you know, not only as a, as an entrepreneur, you can kind of find rewarding, you know, I guess, find it rewarding to kind of win as an underdog versus your competitors, but also the consumer, you know, when you bring more to them at a more affordable price, and, you know, kind of just wow them, that's a, that's extremely rewarding.
What an interesting dichotomy. You mentioned programming as art and you're talking about winning a competition.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, maybe there's some type A and B personalities here, but you guys might probably make a pretty good team where you balance each other out, that sort of thing. So. Yeah, so that's cool. I mean, and I always try to, I don't try to classify people, but, you know, when you meet people, you in your head, you're running this tape through and you're trying to stick people in a box or whatever. And people, for me, generally fall on one side of the fence or the other. You're an artist or you're an athlete.
Right, exactly.
You know, artists are, you know, we're creating something and it's all communal and everything's, and the athlete just wants to crush everybody
right.
in their path.
Right.
And, you know, a healthy dose of both of those is probably pretty good. So.
You know, and then, you know, I just say that's something that kind of, you know, on that competitive front on the software development side is, you know, through my work at Velocity and just in general, you know, kind of mentoring various entrepreneurs, we see a lot of people that have hired developers that have been either maybe a lower-end development shop that kind of just runs their product through their build cycle, or a very high-end that charges them hourly for their work, and they end up paying, you know, more than what they ever could for you know, a software product. You know, so what we've been able to do is carve out this middle ground of really hopefully bringing value to our customers and building a you know, a solid software product for them using what we've learned building our own, and even bringing in things like search engine optimization, some of these lean principles, and, you know, advice on product and not just building a software product for them mm-hmm. at the end of the day. So one of our initial customers is actually LocalView, one of the people that has been on a past.
Nice.
Yeah, so we're building their web application for them, which should be rolling out in a few weeks here, and going to bring kind of all of their features to a web app that can actually just be kind of happened upon. We're pretty excited about that.
Well, that sort of feeds into my next question about the scene, like the Louisville scene. Mm-hmm. You're working with LocalView, and they've, you know, they've been around town for a while, and they mm-hmm. they did a big pivot, mm-hmm. and we documented that here on the podcast. But what's your take on the Louisville startup scene, and what do we have working for us, and what do we have working against us?
You know, I would say that some of the things working for us, and what I've heard from a lot of people that have come here from out of town as part of the Velocity program, is the accessibility of various people. So, you know, they could just go up and talk to someone that's done this before. The access to mentors is a huge advantage here. You know, also the cost of living's very low. That's a nice advantage. And the connection, you know, if there's any sort of distribution play with their work, of course, the centrality of Louisville is good. I would say that, you know, one possible negative here is, you know, we need to think about as a community what we need to create for ourselves as a startup community, and not really look at others as models.
Mm-hmm.
You know, learn from them, but, you know, we aren't going to be the next Silicon Valley. We need to look at what is unique. And what, you know, entrepreneurship is all about finding that opportunity where no one else sees it.
So and doing something new and different.
Yeah, yeah. And that focuses on our low cost of living, focuses on maybe our, you know, we have a lot of people that have families here. That can be a positive, too. You know, that you know, you don't necessarily, a startup isn't defined by young males, you know, under 25 that work 90 hours a week.
In their hoodies.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I think finding what's unique to us, and kind of our unique advantages, is something that we probably should do a little bit more of. But it's a good community. I enjoy participating in it.
Do you guys make the scene? Like startup drinks and startup weekend and those sort of things? Have you participated in any of that stuff?
I have a 9-month-old, so I've kind of been.
No,
you know,
so your
not as
no.
much. So.
And you have three of them, so your answer is probably no as well. My answer is generally no.
Yeah.
I mean, as much as I would like to, I got it.
Yeah. You know, my opinion of those events is, you know, there's nothing better than sitting down with an entrepreneur, talking about their problems and their issues, and really getting into the problems, not necessarily, you know, just more mingling, which a lot of the events sometimes might turn into.
Yeah. Well, guys, I appreciate you coming by, and as of this recording, you're flipping the switch on your website tonight or tomorrow. So by the time this goes out into the ether, onnovative.com is where people see what your product is.
That's true. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, we also have a banking presence at bankonsoftware.com, and that's going to continue as well for our kind of banking-specific software offerings. So.
And then do you tweet? Do you guys?
Not terribly active.
You're not
going
to dispense your knowledge to the world?
Actually, you know, what we do is, you know, if you look on bankonsoftware.com, you'll see a lot of blog entries that have survey knowledge that we've gained through surveying our customers and sharing that knowledge. And that's a great, you know, we haven't actually reached out to one customer and tried to sell them on our product yet. They've all come to us because of that process we have working on our website. So it's that's been a pretty nice thing for us too. So our websites are always a good spot to reach us.
Or LinkedIn, I assume.
Yeah, LinkedIn. Absolutely.
Okay. If anybody has a question or anybody wants some advice or wants to buy you a cup of coffee, because you're accessible.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Anytime.
Thank you so much for coming in, Bill.
Thanks.